If you will, open your Bibles to Daniel chapter 3. In Daniel chapter 3, we'll be reading verses 16 through 18. Daniel chapter 3, verses 16 through 18. In verse 16, it says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Often we consider Bible stories as interesting and fascinating, but not relevant to our situation. If we could remember that the characters involved were people like us, with similar emotions, weaknesses, and temptations, then we can learn from their godly example. This true story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I believe, is a needed one in our generation because their faith was challenged by overwhelming odds, and they overcame that challenge by steadfast faith in God. They had their values straight. They knew what they were living for and what they would die for. And without that type of vision, temptation cannot be resisted. And hopefully this morning, by examining Daniel chapter 3, our faith can be strengthened. Our faith can be enlightened. If you will, look at verse 1 of Daniel chapter 3. In verse 1 it says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Here King Nebuchadnezzar had an image erected, a particular gold image erected, and set it in the plain of Dura, which is believed to be about 10 miles southeast of Babylon. And this great image would measure today at approximately about 90 feet high and 10 feet square. It would be an awesome sight to behold. Now, the motive for such an undertaking is not stated. It's possible that the king erected this image to do homage to his gods and to do homage to himself. Obviously, King Nebuchadnezzar had a tremendous ego and wanted his ego to be known and respected. And in verse 2 it says, And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. For the formal dedication of the image, King Nebuchadnezzar had invitations sent to all of the officials of the kingdom. Now, if all of the officials of the kingdom, all of the governors, all of the administrators were present, that would mean that all of the citizens would be present as well. And this type of dedication would have a tremendous psychological effect, not only upon the officials, not only upon the governors, but upon the citizens as well. This type of dedication would bind the kingdom together in a patriotic and a religious bond. And in verse 3 it says, So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all of the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. When all the officials had reached Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar had an individual send forth the cry that this dedication was about to get underway. And who could resist such a command? Here, Nebuchadnezzar was known to be a mighty monarch, a very successful general, used to getting things go his way. And at the sound of the music, he desired for all of the people who were present to bow down to this golden image. He sought a united kingdom to worship this golden image in which he had erected. Now look at verse 6. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. Obviously, the king was interested in cooperation. It didn't matter how you felt. The king was interested not in personal opinion. He was not interested in likes and dislikes. King Nebuchadnezzar was only interested in all of those individuals to bow down at the command of his word, at the sound of the music. And not only was the king's command overwhelming of itself, but the threat of death in a fiery furnace was obviously very intimidating. It would be hard to argue with an individual who had the power, by just the snap of his finger, to throw you into a fiery furnace if you chose not to bow down to this tremendous image in which he had erected in the plain of Dura. And in verse 7 it says, "So at that time when all of the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, and symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Here at the sound of the music, all of the people fell down and worshipped the image. It didn't matter who you were or what you believed or how you felt about the situation. You were expected to bow down to this golden image. King Nebuchadnezzar desired all who were present to bow down. There were no exceptions. He wanted everyone present to bow down. And we know that peer pressure can be a tremendous temptation. And just imagine how many people were there. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands were present at this dedication. And can you imagine the impact upon your life? Being a Jew in Babylonian captivity, when you see all of these people bow down to this particular image. If everyone else is doing something, few people have the strength to be different. But that was not the case for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They realized that they were Jews, though they were in Babylonian captivity. Though they were expected to bow down to this particular image, they realized their values. They recognized their beliefs. They didn't forget their beliefs, though they were in Babylonian captivity. They didn't forget whom they were serving. They knew that Jehovah was the one true God and the only God to whom they were to worship, to bow down to. So it didn't matter what Nebuchadnezzar said. It didn't matter what would happen to them. It didn't matter to them that all of these people round about them would bow down to this image. That wasn't important to them. Sure, they would stand out like a sore thumb. But it didn't matter to them because they knew that Jehovah was the one true God, the God who created all things. Look at the next verse in verse 8. "Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up.'" Here are certain Chaldeans reported that certain Jews were not willing to bow down to this golden image. Certain Jews who had been given positions of honor in the kingdom of Babylon. Though Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were captive Jews, the wisdom that they possessed was recognized by King Nebuchadnezzar back in chapter 1. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were wiser than all of the wise men of Babylon. And because of this, they were given the position of being King Nebuchadnezzar's wise men. These certain Chaldeans took it upon themselves to remind the king of the consequence of not bowing down to this image. If we will look at verse 13, here Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were taken before King Nebuchadnezzar. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up?" Notice the reaction of the king. He's enraged. He can't believe it. Who in their right mind would refuse his word? How dare these captive Jews refuse to obey King Nebuchadnezzar? And because of his fury, he wants them to be brought before him. And he asked them in verse 14, "Is it true? Have I heard right? Will you not bow down to the golden image in which I have erected? Will you not worship my gods?" Maybe the king thought that he was misinformed, because no one in their right mind would dare dispute the king. It wasn't that he didn't trust the Chaldeans who brought him this word. He wanted to hear it for himself. He wanted to see if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had the guts to withstand him face to face. Well, look at verse 15. "Now if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the gold image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" Here the king shows his fairness, realizing that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, though they were captive Jews, were an asset to him. They were tremendously wise and could aid the king in decision making. And so he gives them another chance to bow down to this awesome image in which he had erected. And King Nebuchadnezzar reasons to himself in the latter portion of the verse, "And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" King Nebuchadnezzar realized that he was the most powerful individual on the earth of the time of this writing. And he questions why Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego acted as they did. Why would they withstand my command? Why wouldn't they bow down to my image? Obviously, Nebuchadnezzar came to the conclusion that it was a religious reason. But it didn't matter to him if it was a religious reason. He questions what God could possibly deliver them from my hands. But Nebuchadnezzar will learn that the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is the one true God. Nebuchadnezzar would not be dealing with an idol, but he would be dealing with Jehovah, the God who created the heavens and the earth. And notice the reaction in verse 16 of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Here Nebuchadnezzar is giving them a second chance. He's sparing their lives. But look at verse 16. "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. We have no need to answer you in this matter.'" These faithful Jews did not need further consideration or discussion. We don't have to think about it any further. Our minds are made up. It doesn't matter how many chances you give us. We will not bow down to your image. But they could have reasoned that his command was useless to resist, or they could be hurting their chances of gaining a position in high office. Or they could have reasoned that this test is just too much to ask. God is just asking us too much to stay faithful to him. Death in a fiery furnace is asking too much of our faith. Was that how they reasoned? No, that wasn't how they reasoned. Look at verse 17. In verse 17 it says, "If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Notice how they reasoned. Here they're in Babylonian captivity, taken from their homeland. They're in a strange place. It's possible that they are away from their parents, separated from their parents. They've been given a position of honor in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, being the king's wise men. And here the king is giving them a second chance in verse 15. This is not like the king, but he gives them a second chance. But notice how they reason. Notice what tremendous faith Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had. Shadrach, Meshach, and they reasoned that if it's God's will to deliver us from the fiery furnace, fine, let it be so. But if it's not God's will to deliver us from the fiery furnace, let it be so. We will die in the fiery furnace before we will bow down to your image. Now put yourself in their place. How would you react? We would like to think that we would react the same way they did, that we would stand up for our beliefs. But we really don't know how we would have reacted if we were put in the position that they were put in. Here they are refuting against the mightiest ruler of their day. They're arguing, saying, we won't bow down. It doesn't matter to us what you do to us. We don't care if we lose our lives. What matters to us, though we are in captivity, we haven't lost our values. What matters to us is serving God no matter what the cost is. And what a tremendous lesson that is for us. Serving God no matter what the cost is. Look at verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. The expression on King Nebuchadnezzar's face changed when he saw that the Jews were still steadfast. Maybe he thought that they refused to bow down because he was not present. Maybe he thought if he brought the Jews to where he was at so he could talk to them face to face, maybe they would see how much power he had, that he could end their lives just like that. But it didn't matter to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It didn't matter how powerful the king was. And the king, knowing this, the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. No longer willing to extend the hand of mercy to give them a second chance to bow down. He was so angry that he commanded that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than what it usually is. He commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be thrown into the furnace. Look at verse 21. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because of the king's command was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. The soldiers, obviously seeing the anger in their king's face, hastily obeyed his command. And because they acted in haste, they lost their lives just by the heat of the furnace. So we know that the heat was real. The fire was real. But God's deliverance was made all the more outstanding by the fact that the soldiers lost their lives because of the flames. But not even a hair of the Jews was affected by the furnace. Look at verse 24. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king, look." He answered, "I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." Here the king becomes astonished, and he questions, and he asks his counselors, "Do we not just throw three individuals into this furnace?" And they respond, "Yes. That's all that you commanded, and that's all that was thrown in, was three individuals." But the king was astonished for two reasons. Number one, that there were four individuals walking around in the midst of the furnace. And number two, that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were not affected by the flames. Can you imagine the reaction of the king, the expression on his face, or any of our faces, if we saw an individual thrown into a fire, and that individual just walking around acting as if nothing is happening? It's hard to say who this fourth individual was. It's described as being like the Son of God. I believe that "like" is the key phrase. But in verse 26 it says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here.' Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together. And they saw these men, on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them." Here the king, seeing that the flames were having no effect upon the three Jews, he commanded that they come out. Now all of the counselors and the administrators who were present along with the king noticed that they were unharmed, that the smell of smoke was not even upon them. Look at verse 28. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Notice the reaction of the king. The mightiest man on the earth at this particular time. And because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego remained faithful, Jehovah was given the glory. King Nebuchadnezzar recognized the superiority of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he states in verse 28 that God sent his angel. So it's possible that the fourth individual was an angel. But it's hard to say because of the perspective of King Nebuchadnezzar concerning the things of God. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Nothing indicates that though King Nebuchadnezzar praised the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, nothing indicates that he gave up his idol gods. But we know from the context that he praised the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that he recognized Jehovah's superiority and he promoted the three Jews in his kingdom. I believe that there are three valuable lessons that we can learn from this account of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Number one, like the three Jews, we should have a picture beyond the present. Look back at verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had the strength to resist because they did not judge the situation by the heat of the furnace, but by eternal life, which awaited them if they had to die. They knew either way that God would deliver them. He would either deliver them in this life by causing them to have their physical lives extended, or he would deliver them in death. Though they would lose their physical life, they would live on in eternity, forever. But what an awesome example. They're in captivity, away from their homeland, putting their positions in the kingdom in jeopardy. They never forgot whom they were serving, though they were in captivity. They never forgot that Jehovah was and is and will always be the one true God. And number two, like the Jews, our strength and deliverance should come from God. If you will look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear. In the eyes of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they knew that whatever came upon them, whatever trial, whatever temptation came upon them, they knew that if they were faithful to God, God would deliver them. He would provide the way out. He would make available the door. And that is true for us today. We may feel that we are bogged down with temptation, but in reality, the door is right there. God will do his part. He will make the way of escape. But we ourselves have the responsibility to take hold of that door and open it. And that's exactly what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had done. They took hold of the way of escape, knowing that it was possible that the way of escape could have been death, but they would live on in eternity. And the third point, the third lesson that we learn from this account is that, like the three Jews, we may influence great men by not yielding to temptation. The reaction of King Nebuchadnezzar in verse 28 was outstanding. We have no evidence that he renounced his idol gods, but because of the steadfastness of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were a positive influence upon the ruler of the world. And the same is true for us. We could be a positive influence for someone great in the eyes of man. Or we could be a positive influence upon someone who is insignificant in the eyes of man. But if we hide beliefs, conceal principles, and cooperate with the world, our chances of being a positive influence for our Lord's kingdom is slim and none. But hopefully from examining the lives of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we understand the importance of being children of God. And being children of God, we have to understand that we have the responsibility to serve Him in this life. And if need be, to serve Him and death. If there's one here this morning that is subject to the Lord's invitation and would desire to become a member of the Lord's church, to become a member of the Lord's kingdom, and you have that opportunity this morning to come forward and confess that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and be buried with our Lord in baptism. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, why don't you come and stand.